Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. Nice. And we have some guests in the studio today.
Some. Multiple. Two. Big guests in town. Well, I guess they both live here. So we're fortunate to have them together.
Well, they've come to BK.
In the same room.
Yeah. Yeah. All the way out to BK.
This is far for Doc.
I don't get out much.
Well, they don't let you out of the cage much.
Yes.
Not
we got
good. It's not good for society.
Dr. Kirk Parsley speaking, former Power Athlete Radio guest, and Mike Sorelli. Now he's speaking. When I point at you,
yes.
Awesome.
Sure. What's up?
And former Power Athlete Radio guest as well. Now we got them both combined, and we're, and not us, John and I, but y'all are on a mission, and we're on a mission to highlight everything you're aiming to accomplish in your upcoming ventures.
Yeah, so let's get some background on what adventures you have. I mean, it's pretty amazing stuff, and I think people would love to hear about it.
Yeah, so I think last time I was here, it was post-Everest.
Yeah.
We knocked that out. So a group of us had come together and, you know, not out of boredom at all, just looking for what is that next thrill. I came up with the idea of 7 continents, 7 days, 7 skydives, which is not a new concept, which multiple groups have tried to pull off and all failed. Mm. Logistically, it's a nut roll. And we're even hitting obstacles as we speak. And we kick off on December 30th. We will get it done. One way or the other. Even if we don't do 7 days, let's say we did 14 days, we still set the record. There is a group that did 7 continents, 7 days, 7 tandem skydives, and they did it in 7 months. So I'm sorry, not 7 days, but 7 months.
Fucking, so a group. What a bunch of fucking losers.
God. I know. We've got a group of
We've got that. We've got that. Yeah, we've got if we, even we have to walk and swim.
Set yourself up for success. That. You know, you don't set yourself up for failure. Even without a private jet, we'll do it commercially. We'll, you know, we've got the ability to hit Antarctica, South America, North America, 3 continents within like probably 2 days. Mm-hmm. We can jump all 3. So mostly Navy SEALs, 75th Army Ranger Regiment, the real badasses, SF, one Marine Scout Sniper, the Black Rifle Coffee guys. We've got a lot of great sponsors and. Starts in Antarctica, as I said, Santiago, from there, Chile, Miami, on to Barcelona, Cairo, Egypt. We're going to jump over the pyramids, then on to UAE, Abu Dhabi, and then on to Perth.
I thought they weren't going to let us do the pyramids.
They
changed it.
They are. And that was, we weren't pushing for that, but they came back and they're like, if you guys want to do it, we'll do it. We're like, yeah, of course we're going to jump over the pyramids.
A fucking great deal.
What else is there in Egypt?
Poverty.
Just fed it somebody.
Other than maybe landing on the back of the Sphinx.
And then we will fly back and do a ceremonial jump into Tampa, which is the home of US SOCOM, for those that don't know. And hopefully we can have some of the families of the fallen that we're jumping in honor of. We can have our families, the press and media, and our sponsors. And then, you know, ultimately each jump is in honor of a fallen comrade. We'll tell their stories in the documentary, which is going to be filmed by Dan Myrick, the producer director of the Blair Witch Project, as well as Christian Krumpel. And additionally, we're trying to raise 1,400 scholarships for Folds of Honor, which does educational scholarships for spouses and children of military service members and first responders. And so a lot of good causes behind it. And I think the best part is this group of like 15 dudes, or it's like the band is back together. Even though some of us never served directly with each other, it's that same environment.
Who are the seven individuals that you guys are representing in the jumps?
I know mine by name, Michael Monsoor, who jumped on a grenade 3 feet from me to save my life. That'll be Antarctica. I want to say Andy's jumping for Dave Hall.
And yeah. Mike Monsoor from the CrossFit, Michael, isn't that him?
Yeah. So there's the Mike Murphy.
Yeah, it was Murph, but they have a Michael workout that I thought was for Mike Monsoor.
Do they now?
Yeah, that's one of the original ones. I think it's okay. Like... Yeah, isn't it like GHD sit-ups and 400-meter runs or something?
We're going to have to look that one up.
He asked me the same thing earlier. I was like, I don't know. Well, and I said the same thing. I'm like, well, I know it's Murph. But
that's well, I know the Murph one because, you know, we did.
Triple Murph this year.
Yeah, well, you just keep adding Murphs. So we went to a gym in Illinois, and on the wall it said the home of the Triple Murph. So they had basically taken the Murph and then times it by three to show how elite they are. I said it was terrible. But I know that there was a Michael workout, and I always thought it was Michael Monsoor.
Or the Murph seems like it's become the most popular by far.
Yeah, well, and the CrossFit thing, it's just become.
What's the Murph pull-ups and runs?
It's 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 air squats, mile run, then mile run. So it's 2 miles and then.
That's awful.
Yeah, no, it's terrible, dude.
Not when I was young, it doesn't sound awful, but now.
Yeah, it's the 100 pull-ups. Like, that's just fucking.
Strict.
Yeah that'd take me a while.
No, strict.
Is it strict?
No,
because he's just wearing 50 round.
Tech's telling me he's been cheating the whole time.
I, of course. If you're not cheating, play to win.
But it's supposed to be done with a 50-pound weighted vest.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay. So then you're kipped.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
No self-respecting man does kipped pull-ups.
I remember when we did it, when I actually owned a CrossFit gym, we were like, well, we fucking have to do it as a rite of passage. And the 100 weighted pull-ups with 50 was a fucking arm exploding workout. The push-ups weren't bad. Sips weren't bad.
Yeah.
The run wasn't really a run. It was more of a... Me like
yeah
yog
no what do you like yogging but more like a stumble
yog
stumble wait stumble it wasn't good
yeah
so Michael Monsoor who
Andy's jumping for Dave Hall who unfortunately took his life.
Monsoor is the workout, the hero workout.
Oh, the Monsoor.
Monsoor, yeah. Four rounds, 800 meter run, 20 sumo deadlift high pulls, 20 burpees, 104 farmer's carry, what's that? 100-yard farmer's carry, 40 sit-ups.
Okay. Yeah, we did that.
Weighted vest.
Yeah, that was an awful workout. I always thought that if we had a hero workout for Parsley, it would just be 6 miles of backwards running.
I went over my head.
8 hours of sleep.
Like just eight. Yeah, it would be 8 hours of sleep and then...
followed by whiskey and steak.
Well, then 225 bench press... 405 back squat with duck feet.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something.
About I didn't know Dave Hall passed away. I'm fucking it. But I mean, that's, I know he and Andy were super close and I knew him through Andy. So that's a sad deal. But I'm glad that we're remembering him in a positive way.
And it just goes to show everyone's dealing with demons, even though they may not show it publicly. The last jump into to Tampa will be for the Kabul 13.
Okay.
Those young Marines, I think one sailor, one soldier, that passed away during the withdrawal. And so the cool thing, too, is we will set 2 world records. We have one 73-year-old who's going to be tandemed in. This guy's a mule. This mule kicks, former Marine back in the day.
Nice.
And he was he was part of the original record.
Yeah, so he was part of that
seven-month tandem
jumps.
Well, the thing I love about Marines is even when they get old, they still identify as Marines.
Yeah.
Like I've met 75, 80-year-old Marines who still have the haircut and still introduce themselves as Marines. Yeah. And you're like, once a Marine, always Marine. That's what I always love about
if they only serve like 2 or 4 years.
All they've got to do is go through Paris Island and it like changes their life.
Yeah. I went through San Diego.
And they just like go. Hey,
there's a sticker on the back of their truck and they're in for life. Yeah. I love it.
The world records that we will set, and we will set them, are not going to bear our names. It's going to bear the names of the fallen. And so that we can present, well, hopefully get multiple copies and present them to the families. So yeah, we're Legacy Expeditions is in full swing, and we've got some other expeditions like Drake's Passage, rowing that possibly in December of 2023.
Oh, wow.
From Antarctica to the tip of South America, which are some of the roughest waters.
Yeah, we had Colin O'Brady on, who's the guy that walked across Antarctica by himself. We had him on the podcast. Pretty much, what was it, like 54 days with just sled him.
I was going to say sled carry behind him.
Yeah, full of food. And it was just him walking by himself, unaided, nothing for, X amount of days.
So he set up a tent.
I think, And then I think he didn't stop for like the last like 7 days. He just kept walking.
Because he was going to run out of food or something, right?
Yeah, he just kept going. He was just like, fuck it, I won't stop. And so we had him on the podcast, and I went back and started researching all of like the historical, like the times that people had. It's pretty fascinating to like look at like that stretch as being one of the most treacherous on the planet.
So. That's insane.
He had a similar goal. It was seven of the highest, or the highest peak on each continent within, I don't know if it was 7 days, but it was certainly each continent.
I remember the K2 one, which is slightly lower than Everest, but like 400 times more gnarly.
Yes.
So he was on like that assault, and then I think like the guys assaulted right before them, and then they went up. And,
well, it was definitely not 7 days.
No, there's no way.
Yeah.
Because it takes you like
he
seven.
Couldn't, he couldn't walk the mountains. In that
length. Well, it also it takes you something like, what was it, like 7 months to acclimatize at base camp. They got to like hang out there for a bunch of days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
Nims is a freak when it comes down to it. Just Nims Day, 14 peaks.
Yeah.
The guy's a freak.
Different guy, but I know. Either way.
No,
both are.
He's just saying that's what it's based off of.
Yeah.
This guy. Okay.
Nims was a former British SBS guy who basically got out and leveraged, I think, took a second mortgage on his house. To do that, of course, he's in Nepali, so he was with the Gurkhas. Mm-hmm. And then I think he was the first Gurkha to try out for British Special Forces and made it SBS. But have you seen the documentary?
No.
Oh, you've got to go watch it.
Okay.
The guys, you look at them, you wouldn't think otherwise, but there's something with the Sherpa, ethnicity. They must just oxygenate differently.
Well, and it's...
I mean,
generations in that altitude too. It's like when I went to Peru, like there's not a flat square inch in that whole damn country. You're either going straight up or straight down all the time. There's just stairs everywhere, and we had all these people who had been training for a year to run, to run the trail that goes to Machu Picchu, and it's a marathon, and they're going to run through it. Well, the Sherpas are just like random guys that they grabbed and said, hey, you want to help us? And they had like these 200-pound backpacks on with like all the tents and food and everything
to set these people up.
And they did the thing twice in the length of time that all these people were running. and then they come by and we have the ceremony for them and we give them, a bunch of money for them, which is essentially like $30 for us. You know, it was like $1,500 for them. And they're just like, 22 to 30-year-old dudes who were like gardeners or worked at a shop, whatever. And someone just grabbed them. I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. And I was exhausted just like walking around, like just going to restaurants and just like walking from like going to sightseeing, whatever. Like my legs were smoked. I was tired like for 2 weeks the whole time I was there. And they like. It's a totally different animal, man.
But you grow up in it. There's a documentary about, I think it's called The Sea People, where there was, I don't know if you saw this, but there's a group of indigenous people, I think it's somewhere outside the Philippines, that live on no land. They live on basically these thatched islands that they've made, and their entire existence is in the sea. And like these guys have like, you know, 6 minute like underwater free dives. They hunt, they're like, and they went and did a bunch of genetics. Like there's something different in their eyes. Their lungs are different, how they oxygenate blood. I mean, it's just like completely different set of things going on with those individuals that have adapted them to this life. So, I mean, it makes sense. I mean,
if you humans are very adaptable.
So they basically changed their DNA.
Yeah.
And then passed it.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, it's down the next generation.
Yeah, and I mean, it's pretty much you know, like a form follows function.
Yeah,
I mean, if this is your life, you're eventually going to live into it. I mean, you know, you think about being born in Peru. I mean, that's all those individuals know.
Yeah,
and you're like, God, this is like some random gardener. But like, look at the Sherpa guys that carry all that stuff, and you'll see these people climbing Everest, and there's like a Sherpa dude with like a wool coat on.
Yeah,
and he's like with no crimpins, and all these dudes are covered in all this like North Face stuff, and the dude's like pulling the guy up, and you're like. He's like, oh, this is my seventh fucking summit this month.
Yeah. You know? Well, and it's like when the ultra marathons first started getting popular, I had a SEAL buddy who got into them. And he, you know, he had all his gear and, you know, his goo packs and like his scheduled and his watch and his heart rate monitor and knew exactly when he was going to eat and hydrate and all this stuff. And he's like, but every time I get my ass kicked by some Mexican guy who like, ran with the burrito and he had like sandals made out of car tires. He beat everybody by 3 hours.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market.
We've built our online training business by partnering with Train Heroic and helping us deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training.
And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best tech and training, go to trainheroic.co/powerathletehq. And now back to the show.
Yeah.
Fuck. That's, was there any talk of, I don't know if you ever saw this, but did you ever see Bear Grylls? So I always thought Bear Grylls was like a complete fucking scam. Like I just thought it was always bullshit, you know, because he'd be like, oh, look at this, you know, like, and then they show the camera. He's like, you know, right next to a like a hotel and they just like, you know, it was movie magic. So I always kind of thought he was bullshit. And then there was a deal on YouTube where those guys had those they're like those little like winged carts that have like a little, I don't know, fan on the back. And they somehow like he went over the top of Everest in it. And like we watched a YouTube video and he's like doing this and all of a sudden he's like, woo, and like went over the top of Everest. And I was like, okay, that guy's not full of shit.
Bear Grylls.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to watch this.
So Kristen, our producer, he said, he was telling me, he's like, yeah, this expedition is Bear Grylls meets America's greatest race or something like that. Greatest American.
Yeah, the Amazing Race.
Oh, the amazing race. Yeah. There you go. I didn't know what either one of them were because I'm
so I think didn't Bear Grylls so. Get in trouble
yeah.
for like sleeping in hotels
yeah.
or...
Yeah, and so they
it's a good move.
They were also like shooting him, and then they like somebody came over and like was like, you know, like Instagrammers in the wild was shooting, and he's like right next to a hotel, and they're like, oh, I'm out here in the wild, and they were it was all staging this shit. So I was like, this guy's full of shit. So I remember this is years ago. We got online, and there was a YouTube video, and I don't know what they're called, but they're like these little like flight deals, and they have like a looks like a fan in the back.
Oh, so basically he's under a canopy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like a paraglider.
Yeah, like a paraglider yeah. canopy. Yeah. And these guys are going back and forth, and they're like, ah, the winds are too much. And he's like, we're going for it. He's like, woohoo. I just remember he went over the top of Everest. And I'm like, okay, that guy's not a total fucking fraud. If he's basically in this small little hang glider with like a what looked like a ceiling fan attached to his ass.
Yeah.
And he went over Everest.
But so was it Everest?
Yeah. It was legitimately Everest. He did it.
Movie magic.
It could be. I mean, it was on YouTube, so who knows. But was there any talk about you guys jumping out like at Everest, and was that ever on the table?
So, you know, people are like, unfortunately, when we did some media, people are like, they landed on Everest. We're like, no, we did not land on Everest. We landed next to Everest. You know, could you land on Everest?
No.
No. Could somebody, I think you would need like a giant-sized hook and pile like tape onto the peak, and then I'd have to wear a suit of hook and pile.
But I mean, you guys jumped out and then like went by Everest. Yes. I mean, obviously you landed as you were going through that. I mean, like coming through the clouds and realizing what this is the tallest peak in the world. Was there?
So did y'all fall past the peak? You went out above it and fell, in essence, 10,000 feet or something.
I want to say first you were so focused on getting a good shoot,
yeah,
parachute over your head, but everything was on oxygen.
Yeah.
It was, I wish I could have stayed up there longer. I wasn't turning and burning whatsoever in terms of like steep turns, because you just wanted to stay under canopy at elevation as long as possible.
Sure.
But it was, I've told my wife and I told Andy, we're going to have to take our spouses out there next year to do it. And I'll tandem my wife in to the same drop zones if I can get the guy who runs it to bless that off. But what you do, the mention of Bear Grylls, what we want to do is for future trips, pretty much do the same thing, but on steroids, mm-hmm. where there's no camera crew.
I'm prescribing on the steroids.
No camera crew on the ground. We jump in the camera crew. So everything is organic.
Yeah.
Almost sort of like a Les Stroud Survivor Man, if you remember that.
So wait a minute. Your wife and Andy's wife are going to let you guys tandem them in.
In Nepal.
There's no fucking way my wife would be like, you can go fuck yourself. There's absolutely no way you're getting in the area.
You know, my wife has said the same thing. She's like, I don't know if you're that good.
Yeah, exactly. I don't trust you.
I'm not. That's the exciting part.
I've seen you with the kids. You are not that good. You can't change a diaper.
There is one place. So Namche, which is the highest city in the world. You've seen the pictures. Yeah. It's like the half dome on tiers.
Yeah.
Just about an hour hike north of that at a higher elevation is something called the 360 Sherpa Lodge. And you wake up at 5 a.m. to watch the sun come over one of the peaks, and you just keep doing a 360, and it's just, you see Everest, you see Amont de Blanc, you see all the major peaks, Lopsi. It is phenomenal. Even if you weren't doing jumps or climbing the mountains, just to go hike there and stay there one night and wake up in the morning and see that is like nothing I've ever seen before.
Sweet. Yeah. So what's the jumping in Antarctica? What part of, obviously Antarctica is real big. I mean, are you guys going to go off the shelf? Because Tex believes that's like where the end of the world, the shelf and
the wall.
And the wall.
Are you going to jump over the
jump
wall?
Jump off the wall.
Yeah.
So we are going to Union Glacier Camp.
Okay.
We'll have to stay there. So we arrive on the 3rd, according to the plan. We'll probably get a jump between then and the 9th. But the plan is to jump on the 9th. The 757 comes in to pick us up. So we jump the morning of the 9th. That thing comes in the afternoon. We get on there and we head off to...
This is news to me.
You realize that when you guys jump in Antarctica, you'll be able to actually squash any of the flat earth theories. Like that alone is good, because you're like, well, if it was... I mean, we'll legitimately be with cameras. I mean, we can see the curve. You can see all this.
So apparently, I guess the environmentalists don't like skydiving out in Antarctica. As if Why? The 100 other people in the camp... Like stomping around and do anything differently than we do.
Well, there's pyramids down there. That's where all the like the aliens and reptiles live.
It's all farting that occurs because of the altitude, and you're putting CO2.
Yeah, you're bringing that CO2 down to the surface.
Well, that was funny. We had Colin on. He was showed up to give some talk, and there was some guy like hanging around. Finally, like goes over. He's like, hey, you know, it's just his family's there, and the guy's like, okay, nobody's here. You can be honest. Like, you saw it, right? He's like, saw what? He's like, you know, the edge. And he like went through this whole thing. He's like, I walked from end to end and I didn't see any of this stuff. It was nothing but white. The guy's like, well, and he's like, no, but I went uphill. And then the GPS told me when I was going downhill, I legitimately went over the crest. And this guy was like, there's no way they got to you. And just like stormed off. And I'm like,
well, that's, God damn so it. To me, that's the true definition of a conspiracy, right? Conspiracy theorist, right? Because a conspiracy theorist basically, no matter what evidence you provide, they're going to find a way to discredit that evidence and say why that doesn't matter. So I think if you just believe something that's non-mainstream, but nobody can give you good evidence as to why it's not true, it's not really a conspiracy theorist. It's just it's a belief.
It's a theory.
It's a theory.
Yeah.
For example, but when you aren't willing to change your mind no matter what, then like
difference between a conspiracy theory and a theory was just 6 months.
Well, that's turning out to be true.
The biggest conspiracy I think that's out there is that Kirk Parsley was actually a SEAL.
Yeah.
I've never saw it. I've never met anyone that served with him.
Yeah.
I know he was a doctor.
That's not true. I did meet somebody that served with him. So I have. And
I've got some cool guy pictures from the 80s, man.
My just UDCs. You and the UDCs.
Yeah. Let me just say this. If you've ever had a dinner with Kirk, and he's surrounded with a bunch of guys from his era. You're talking like late 80s, 90s, and there's one in particular in Dripping Springs, Bruce,
Schlieman, yeah.
That you get a few drinks and the stories come out, and my wife was just like, she's like, I don't want you.
Why aren't these guys in prison? Because we were SEALs.
We were fortunate that their generation did not go to war.
Yeah.
Because they would have been on the front page of every major news outlet. Just
it was a different a different era.
It was a different time.
I think this is like this is pre-Christ. Ethics didn't really exist. And
well, there was a weird time, and we've talked about it on the podcast. There was a weird time in history, which actually was about 200 years, where we talk about like the death of God. I talk about it. It's my favorite part in philosophy, where like nobody believed in the Roman gods anymore, and it was before Jesus Christ. So there was like 200 years when like people like Parsley could just fucking crush shit. So, all right. So what else? The seven continents. You're representing these guys. Is this just like the first piece in the puzzle? I mean, we obviously talked about a few other adventures associated with this. Is this kind of something that you guys are going to do and kind of extend into some different adventures?
Yes, and it wasn't necessarily, you know, I didn't go in with this sort of business proposal of what this would turn into. Everest was a proof of concept. And we did raise $200,000 for the Kids of Extortion 17.
Oh, shit.
For scholarships. So, you know, we would love to look at a pipeline where we can take those trips. One, we like jumping into unknown DZs. Mm-hmm. DZs in elevation in the mountains that aren't traditional, you know, sports drop zones. Mm-hmm. And we want to do it with veterans who need a spiritual awakening. And that could be as simple as like, hey, I used to ride on the side of Little Birds. I just need to feel that again. Mm-hmm. And then additionally, you know, Logan Stark and Jericho Denman are involved. You got Andy Stumpf. You got Doc supporting with the human performance side, which is always interesting. I mean, Whoop is going to be looking at the performance of all the guys on the expedition, especially mm-hmm. when you think about switching from time zone to time zone. We are specifically flying coach to, let's just say, inject a little pain.
To see if I'll have an aneurysm. That's why we're doing it.
To mess with guys.
I recommend Doc in a middle seat.
Middle seat,
yeah, yes. Middle seat the whole way.
Between two rather large people.
Yeah.
As if you're not large yourself.
Yeah.
So we are looking heavily at the human performance piece, and we're going to share that information with everyone. We're not holding that close, especially if there's a way, because we're looking at like these circadian rhythm glasses and lights to see if it helps sort of assimilate people to the different time zones. But the lack
we're
of sleep.
Yeah, we're going to see. We're going to test a bunch of different things to see if we can what truly mitigates the unavoidable detriment to people's health and performance during this, right? So, of course, when you misalign everybody's circadian rhythms and, you know, changing locations and the stress and the frustration and chaotic sleep cycles and all of that stuff, like, everybody's going to be, you know, a shit sandwich, essentially. And so we're going to see what types of things can we do that are going to help people, you know? And we're doing some testing. We're doing salivary cortisol, like during it, we're doing some serum labs before and after, but it's too hard to ship everything back. So we're doing like some salivary cortisol along the way and like some other testing, neurocog tests, strength tests and things like that. Just watching people's decline, seeing, no, it's not true research. There's no IRB. People are just going to say, hey, I want to do that. Here's a smorgasbord of things you can choose from if you want to try it, like a supplement or whatever, some sort of, you know, the glasses, the retimers, all this type of stuff. We'll write it all up at the end and just say, like, you know, it's not going to be any surprise what we see as far as people declining over time, but, you know, there might be some surprises into what sorts of things work.
So Whoop with a band has created a group. Anyone can go onto the Whoop app and see how we're performing, recovery and strain. Yeah, so the public can get involved. I think everyone's going to decline pretty rapidly. At what really point quickly, yeah. is going to be interesting? I think everyone will decline except for me, but that's just because of who I am.
Yeah. Is there a ton of physical stress with skydiving?
You know what? For a lot of guys, because a lot of these guys have a lot of jumps, it's not as noticeable from the early days, but I think it will pop its ugly head back up when guys are on the bird in Barcelona having a little sleep mm-hmm. and get worse and worse. I think that the nerves will come back. Like, oh my God, I'm not at the traditional
And the altitude will matter as well, because you know, they get up and they start getting slightly hypoxic and the heart rate goes up and it's stress that's raising their heart rate. Mm-hmm.
So that is why we conducted 1 week of training mm-hmm. in Phoenix. We did that October 3 through 8. And so we got 550 jumps amongst the 13 safely done. We're going back December 5th to the 8th. To do a second camp, working on canopy control skills, confined EZs, and putting process and procedure in place, because you know we know this. It's that process and procedure that's going to get us through safely when your cognitive abilities and your performance start to dip from the sleep sleep deprivation. But ultimately, to your question is, we want to turn this into something where we can uphold the legacy of the fallen, hence legacy expeditions, tell their stories, because when their stories stop being told, that's when their stories die, as well as securing the education of their legacies left behind, their kids, their spouses. But we would love to also give and set up free fall camps for vets, some amputees, get them outfitted for specialized rigs every few months, where we take 15, 20 of them and get them their A license, put them through AFF, and give them the gift of flight.
Nice, dude. It's badass. So,
and we have an offer for you too.
Oh, you do?
The tandem seat. You should.
Yeah, I think he's outside.
There's no way, dude. I'm like 200. I remember years ago, Stump was like, you would have to weigh like 225.
There is a new rig that I think is up to 800 pounds between you. So it's the tandem heavy.
I'm talking about the
$1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on. It's only $1 million you get to come along and do every jump.
Oh. That sounds amazing.
That's discretionary income for you. Take
a week vacation, John. I got you.
A week vacation that might end up being 3 weeks long. Yeah. You never know.
Hey, honey, I'll be back. That sounds, I mean,
I'll be back in one form or another.
If anybody is interested, reach out to Mike Cirelli.
Put your offer in. Reach out to lrobinson@foldsofhonor.org. Larry Robinson. Again, lrobinson@foldsofhonor.org. And that money goes direct to Folds of Honor. It's 100% tax deductible. We did have some interested parties in the beginning. Somebody will pop that back up, and they'll be part of a world record attempt. So
nice.
Pretty cool.
Hey, Doc, I know you just had a big peptide conference. I've been dying to ask you, is there anything next level on the peptide front that we need to know about?
Man, that's
a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. Well, as you guys know, Doc Parsley is a 99 level wizard when it comes to peptides and that type of stuff.
What would you say a peptide is, John?
It's actually just a whole bunch of little proteins that are bound together. And that's what peptides are. They're little proteins that are bound together that elicit a response. And
they're characteristically smaller than proteins, but it's a little change of amino acids.
Amino acids. Yeah.
And they vary, you know, from 2 or 3 to 50, 60. I think tesmorelin's around something, 70 or something like that. But they're in your body organically, and they have all sorts of, so like, you know, growth hormone, I want to say is like 191 amino acids long. And when it gets first produced and gets cleaved down to 170 something, 150 something, 157, not on something. But as you progressively cleave those amino acid blocks off, they have different physiological effects. So does growth hormone increase fatty oxidation to make you leaner? Yes. But you don't need the entire growth hormone molecule. You just need the little section in there, and that's the peptide. Mm. And so they're just figuring these things out by finding peptides and going, let's see what this does. And they put it in mice, and they start doing benchtop research with it, and they figure it out. Now the Russians have been doing this stuff since the 80s.
I thought it was even earlier than before that.
Well, they were publishing
that the government knows about.
No,
they're publishing in the 80s about it. So if you read Russian well, then you can, at a technical level, you could probably get a lot of data on it. But
you know, a lot of, you know, of course they're Olympic athletes, and getting past whatever testing we had for in those days, because
wherever they're looking for Diana Ball, and these dudes are using peptides.
Yeah. And so it essentially every physiological function in your body is controlled by peptides to some degree.
Sure.
And so you can enhance, and you know, you can ramp things up that you want to be higher, and you can settle things down that you want to be lower. And you have to understand a lot of cellular physiology to understand like what's the right peptide for that. And that's kind of the game right now. And then you have to be able to get them, because they're all technically for research and not FDA approved. You can get them through pharmacies for research. You can obviously buy anything off the internet, but I wouldn't recommend that.
I'm pretty sure you can buy a nuclear weapon if you really need to.
You buy peptides, and that actually at the conference, one of the things that they presented was, and it was a third party, had nothing to do with anyone who sold peptides or dealt with them. It was a third party chemistry organization that. They imported, I can't remember what it was, but it's one of the more common peptides. I want to say it's like 81 different samples, and two of them had the active ingredient in it. Mm. And those two only had 2% of what they claimed. So everybody was just buying crushed bird feathers and from China, and you know, thinking they're taking peptides and they're taking something totally inert, or hopefully inert. Wow. Hopefully it wasn't harmful.
So really the access is reputable place to get
them. Yeah, I mean I would go through a physician who deals in that, and it's not that uncommon now. I mean there you know, it's kind of in that age management medicine field. A lot of those guys have transitioned away from just giving everybody growth hormone, mm-hmm. to working with peptides. There's several thousand doctors in America that do it, and there's several hundred who are probably really good at it. So it's not that hard to find somebody.
My son's a type 1 diabetic. So he's a type 1. And so there's a ton of research in the peptide field, like the semaglutide increasing beta cell density. I mean, there's all of this really interesting stuff that I'm like, I set up alerts on Google. So I've been getting a ton of research, and then Doc always comes back with always some interesting stuff from these peptide stuff. So that's where I kind of have dived in, because I really think at some point they're going to figure out like how to turn the beta cells back on, which is really interesting. With type 1 diabetics, the beta cells get attacked, but yet the alpha cells don't. So like, it's so weird that like this autoimmune thing attacks this one little thing. And for him, his beta cells are like, they work sometimes, but not all the time. So like, he doesn't take insulin every day for his meal. And sometimes he's fine. It's like this moving target, because he's in something called the honeymoon, where his beta cells are still functioning. It's just like, it's super inconsistent. So it's not like these other people where they're like, oh, their beta cells don't work, so they can kind of manage everything. For him, it's like you give him a half an unit of insulin and it doesn't do anything. And then other days it puts him in the tank. So it's like a constant, like he has a CGM on his arm. It's like like trying to hit a moving target. And I keep thinking that like of all of the stuff I've seen, they've done immunotherapies. I mean, like I'm on all, like I get all of these studies on the type 1 stuff. And, you know, they've got into like immunosuppressants. They've got into this. I mean, the one thing at least I think is finding a way to replenish and kind of rebuild the beta cells, which I think is a viable option with the peptides.
Yeah. And the other thing that you can do is you can make his insulin sensitivity so amazing that, you know, just putting, you know, two or three standard deviations above the norm in insulin sensitivity, and then he actually needs less insulin to be healthy. And now you increase his beta cell density and increase, you know, production of that. And coming up from a couple of different angles.
So sometime within his lifetime, that's what docs think. They'll figure a way to activate the.
Try to research like how far back did we find about type 1, and there was writing in ancient Greek where they called it wasting disease, mm-hmm. where an individual would die in a puddle of their own sugary urine. So I mean, they've had I mean, you know, ancient Greek. I mean, thousands of years we've had this type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty amazing. Like the guy who, there's a Dr. Bernstein, who wrote a pretty good book called The Bernstein Protocol. He talks about like when they first started actually exogenous insulin. I mean, people would just die and there's nothing you can do. And then they came up with exogenous insulin and they were getting it from pigs. And like he takes you on this whole journey where all of a sudden he would like take it and they had no way to check your blood sugar. So he would just fall and like pass out, mm-hmm. you know, just go into like where the blood sugar drops and you go into diabetic coma,
yeah.
and then wake up like 3 days later and be like, oh fuck, I guess I took too much. I mean, the story is fucking like the craziest shit I've ever heard. It's like probably like if you go back and read like you know the SEAL Vietnam era SEALs and you're like, Jesus, I would have died the first day. Those guys.
Mean, all medicine's crazy like that. If you look at the idea of blood transfusion. They did that in medical schools, like up on the lectern, they'd say like, hey, well, a couple of people coming out. They just like put blood from one person into another to prove that you could do this. Of course, they didn't know anything about blood typing. And so if the types didn't match, you know, maybe both guys died, maybe one guy died. And that was literally happening on a regular basis. Like, oh, there's this new concept, and they come in and they start doing it. You read about the frontal lobotomy and what a bunch of quackery that was and how long that lasted. And I mean, it's all pretty scary, man.
Well, there was a dude they were talking about was a battlefield surgeon, did the fastest amputation. Did you ever read this?
I didn't read that, but then I hear we take the largest jumps in medicine and understanding during wartime. And then we just had Omar Crispy on.
Yeah. Definitely for trauma and infectious disease.
Yeah. Well, we had Omar on and, you know, he, the 200-pound IED blew up his Humvee and burned 75 to 80% of his body. Mm. And the whole time as we're sitting here, you know, your skin is your body's largest organ and it's how your nervous system interacts with the surroundings. And it's like the skin, like. The fact that he crispied himself, like, I just wonder, like, his nervous system must be just like, it's like, as we're sitting here talking, I'm like, man, this is the stuff that's going through my mind. And the fact that this dude is being able to sit here and have, you know, good sense of humor with a laugh on his face, I'm like, this might be the toughest motherfucker on the planet.
And he spoke about his friends in different prosthetics and how advanced it's become since, like, the Iraqi freedom.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the prosthetics have come a really, really long way. I mean, especially the hands. Like, they're doing some amazing things with hands.
There was a whole bunch of video stuff on, like, the prosthetics because, I actually worked with a guy who was a below-the-knee amputee, and then I got reached out to a guy that was above-the-knee amputee, and there's, like, a huge distinction. The guys that are below the knee can live pretty normal. When they go above the knee, it's really dicey. So I got into this, and the fucking research, the computer models, and how they're doing this, and, like, they were talking about the cost, and I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. That's where I want my tax dollars. I want to earmark it. Like, figure out how to get soldiers the most bitching prosthetics and let them live normal lives. Like, that's what I wanted, all my tax dollars. Like, that's what we should be wasting, not fucking IRS agents.
We've got a guy on our training program, Grindstone. So James Simpson.
Yeah.
So he was in the UK, serves in the military, but now wheelchair rugby.
Murderball. Have you seen this?
No.
Oh, my. It's awesome.
These guys play rugby in wheelchairs and absolutely fuck each other up.
Yeah. So James posts his training on his Instagram. So it's cool to see him adapt and get creative. Define Grindstone and connect it to still the movement pattern, still the planes of motion, and how he's able to do it and then carry it over to a badass.
Yeah, they have these bitching like wheelchairs that just go fucking Mach 1 and they just launch them into each other. It's fucking great. And I was like, this is the most violent thing I've ever seen. I'm in. But yeah, it's
and they're a protected group, so who can tell them not to do it, right?
And they're all in on it.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, fuck you, don't tell me what to do.
It's like, so, hey dude, I lost my legs.
Yeah,
kiss my ass.
But no, like the prosthetic stuff's really fascinating. But then there's the other part of us where we're like, fuck man, like this is the other piece. If you're gonna send people to war,
you have to have a plan in place to deal with them when they come back and take care of your fucking broken toys.
Right.
You can't send people over and expect them to do this and bring them home and then be like, you're on your own. Like, if you send these individuals over there and you know, you break your toys, fix your toys, take care of them. I think that to me personally is the most disgusting, fucking most difficult thing for me to stomach as an American, to think that we don't take care of our individuals that go fight our wars.
Well, you know, it's in the contract. And the problem with it is that it's a big administrative glut, like everything else. You know, the VA started out as a good concept, and now it's just overwhelmed by bureaucracy. And, this came up all the time when I was retiring SEALs. And none of them want to put in a disability package, you know, because they're like, I'm not disabled. Like, I'm fine. And I'm like, that's not the point. That's not the agreement. The agreement was, hey, I will do anything you teach me to do. And, you know, jump out of planes, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. And you teach me how to do it, I'll do it. And their side of it is, and we'll fix everything that we break. And if we can't fix it, we'll compensate you for it. So being 100% disabled vet doesn't mean that you're 100% disabled. It means that's 100% of the amount of money they're willing to give you for everything they broke.
Yeah.
And you can be a totally normal looking guy, completely capable of going out and working out and doing, you know, sure, living life. But that doesn't mean that you don't have a ton of medical problems that they can't fix. And they're saying, well, since we can't fix it, you know, here's a couple of grand a month instead.
Sure.
And you can go try experimental treatments with that money, or, you know, whatever, invest it if you think your life's going to be shorter or whatever, like that, you know, that's the game. And that I will say that I think at least in our community, things are getting better. Sure. Right. But it's not from the VA. It's all from the nonprofit organizations, you know, and that's moving the needle though, because that stuff's getting some public attention, and it's gone beyond our community now. And there's lots of non-for-profits paying for, really crazy stuff like hyperbarics, right? Like, we know hyperbarics works, yeah, but the FDA regulates the hell out of it.
I played in the NFL, which was pretty much like going to war.
Yeah.
According to Tom Brady. Thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. So, I just had Tom Herman on the UT football coach. Right before this on my podcast. And I'm like, so you and Tom Brady, it's like you guys both went to war. He's like, oh, I'm not.
So Doc, it's a joke because Doc and I are on this text thread where we're basically battling about him, like, oh yeah, playing the NFL is like going to war. And then I've said, that was my silent jab at our fucking inside fucking deal. But yeah, we totally went to war. I fought imaginary wars in the trenches and the battles. It was great.
You know, you asked a question about one, the VA triggers me. Like, just to go on to the VA and just, it took me 2 years to get hearing aid replacements. I still don't have a replacement for my CPAP.
I've been out for 9 years. I haven't seen the VA once.
Well, I did. So it's funny enough, when I retired, they're like, hey, you got to go to either San Antonio, Fort, what is here? What's the base?
The Air Force Base?
Hood? Not here in Austin.
Neighbor.
Like, to go get your retired ID. I'm like, Roger, thanks. And then finally I got mine about a year ago. And of course I'm married now, so I need my wife to have one for insurance purposes. And I'm like, you're about to get an education and hurry up and wait around. You know, getting this.
And we don't do that here.
So
they get over there.
The VA should be downsized like every government organization to a core set of.
If you just got rid functions. Of them and we just privatized them.
On the medicine side, yeah. Completely 100%. On the educational benefit side, there's some administration that has to be for oversight. But the medicine side, privatized. You can't fix your broken toys unless you fix society first. And I think if you look at some sort of case examples, the post-traumatic stress rate amongst Israeli soldiers is extremely low. And those guys see some shit because the entire society had to serve. Mm-hmm. So there is a common thread and a respect that they reintegrate their soldiers, having seen what their soldiers, for the most part, have seen. You see the same thing with, I'm trying to think of the author, great author, Tribe. It'll come to me.
God, I have that book.
But where he talked about, it'll come to me, but he talked about how Native American tribes reintegrate their veterans coming home into that tribal aspect. Well, there was a great article by one of the commandants recently that talked about the difference between society and the military. And what he was advocating for is that the military should not be used for progressive testing of some of these ideologies. And he talked about how in the military, the culture...
Not Seth Godin. Seth Godin.
Tribe. Sebastian Younger, right? Yeah, there you go.
Sebastian Younger. Yeah.
You know, he talked about in the military, we try to enforce leadership principles or instill leadership principles like conformity. And conformity is not necessarily a bad thing. Even on a football team, there's got to be conformity to process and procedure. Everyone's not running their own way. Team ability, things like that. But he said overwhelmingly within the private sector or civilian populace that individuality is a high sort of leadership principle. And he's not saying that's not a bad thing. We all want some semblance of individuality. We want people to retain their self-identity. But when a veteran, regardless of whether they saw war or not, comes out of that tribal environment in the military and steps into it back into... I'm not going to say the real world. Steps back into the civilian world. Yes, you're like, what the hell is this? It goes. It's an antithesis to everything you lived and breathed for 4 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and that you just have an allergic reaction.
Well, I mean, honestly, same thing happens in NFL players, right? Like, here's this job I had, and here's my friends, here's my identity, and then one day they just fucking show up and hand you shit and push you out the door and say, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And like, it isn't anybody walks around and says, thank you for your service or anything, but you know, they probably should, because it's a lot like serving in the military. I'm with you, dude.
Cut up those little snippets right there. Please send them to me.
I like when Tom Brady said I knew what he was trying to say. Like, you know, like we go to training camp and it's this, and you know, like I understand the now, like what he was trying to do. And the problem is people just fucking dove on it because they just want to fucking splash.
And sometimes it's the veteran that going crazy that was like in the military for 4 years, not denigrating someone's service the World War II generation, a lot of them only served for 4 years.
Yeah.
And I would never put myself next in their category. But maybe like was on a FOB in Iraq, and it's just they go off the hinge. It's like, hey, dude, he's making an analogy that he basically, his life is consumed by football when he calmed down.
Yeah, no, I would say the one metaphor that would hold though for the NFL is that, you know, you're going from being the best in the world at something to being sort of a nobody, right? And that's what happens in the teams, right? So we have guys who serve 20 years.
Not a bad thing.
And they go from being like, I am the absolute best in the world at what I do. I went through this crazy selection process to be here, one of the few guys who could make it and thrive in this world. And now I'm going to get out and I'm going to go work in a cubicle and like compare myself to,
or you get attacked by some county sheriff, like in the documentary First Blood.
Yeah.
You know, John J. Rambo.
And then you can't get enough body bags at that point. Yeah.
Sad, but true story.
Yeah.
So I stood up a program called Vetted, one of my many textbook failures stepping out of the military. Some good people like General Tony Kukulo, who's a vice chancellor at UT. McCraven helped me a little. Admiral Bobby Inman, who's well-known in Austin, helped me. But you know, basically, it was a MBA light for senior military leaders getting out, both enlisted and officer, to get about the financial acumen that they lacked and prepare them to either start businesses or get jobs. One of the things that we're
talking about. So kind of like the Honor Foundation.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But we were much more focused on the transition and preparation, but the actual, the financial in business piece.
Yeah.
One of the things we threw around, because there are a lot of analogies with pro sports, is that you're the very best and you lose your tribe. And then it's just like the NFL, the MLB, just like the military, are great getting you guys into the league. They are awful, regardless if you have a player union or not. Our player union is called the VA.
Yeah.
They're not good at putting people back into the real world. But we had talked about putting football players or pro athletes right next to some veterans because of the common threads. And some of these guys have money, these guys don't. Maybe they find something, they start businesses on entrepreneurship. It just, we never got enough ahead until we hit some political roadblocks in Texas and we got shut down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was trying to do, Joe Musselman, you know, started the Honor Foundation, and he and I were actually
working together when the whole thing started, we're pitching to try to do basically a year of really intense rehab for the SEALs, you know, and like do things like their hormones and peptides and give them hyperbarics and, you know,
and make them reflect
transcranial magnetic stimulation, you know, whatever, like whatever the cutting edge stuff was, like try to help these guys compensate for their deficits and ameliorate what to the best we could for whatever, you know, deficits they had. And we pitched it over and over and over and over again. And there just wasn't enough money for the medical side. You know, like we did a small little pilot in my brick and mortar practice in Point Loma. And it was too expensive. So now that's kind of what all the foundations are. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, how many SEAL foundations do we have? Like probably six or seven or
part, something. Part of it is just timing.
Yeah.
And I don't think people were ready.
Yeah. And so now, you know, now those organizations are paying for a lot of that treatment that I was, you know, trying to get implemented back then. And so they're, you know, they're paying for hyperbarics, they're paying, you know, they're funding people to do psychedelics, they're mm-hmm. funding, you know, peptide use, they're funding, you know, like just about any kind of transcranial magnets, transcranial ultrasounds, you know, whatever, you know, whatever might help, you know, that has some, that, you know, that's not 100% voodoo, that has like some plausible credibility to it.
And I think personally, the hyperbaric chamber protocol was fucking huge for me.
And if you combine that with peptides, yeah, it's amazing. Like and, the difference, that's the biggest difference I've seen. And,
are those effects long lasting or does it require recurrent?
We don't know.
That's what we're trying to
that's
figure
what
out.
That's what we're in Dr. Joe DiRudi, who we met through Doc, who's like the, you know, kind of the authority on this. So we text a bunch and I talked to Doc a lot, like, you know, after you go through the 40 session protocol, because it was 5 sessions a week for 8 weeks, which is really fucking hard to do. But I did it and I noticed a ton of cognitive improvement. And then I wondered, is there like a topping off effect? Like, could I do one and this? And so I hit Joe constantly with these questions. He's like, nobody fucking knows. And I'm like, well, how often should you do it? He's like, I don't know. We've like, nobody does.
That's and we don't even know like how short can you go, right? Like, so
there was
like,
one protocol that the Navy tested, and that's the only research they have because it was so financially, I guess like just the investment was so big that, yeah, it was just thing they could only do
one. So maybe you could do it with 2 dives a day and do it in half the time.
Yeah.
We don't know.
So Joe's kind of doing the research on it.
But when you know, like some of the effects, so like, you know, one of the things that it does is it increases, you know, basically the chemical pathways in your brain that help decrease inflammation in the brain and help, you know, regenerate damaged brain tissue and help, you know, new neural pathways to form. And one of the ways that it does that is by it, something called angiogenesis or neovascularization. So you're growing new blood vessels. And the benefit of hyperbarics is you don't need blood vessels to get the oxygen there.
So the body can use plasma to get oxygen around, and the plasma it absorbs so that it can oxygenate part of the brain that would never get oxygen.
But then that increased activity in those cellular environments lead to blood vessel growth. So if you do, there's actually peptides I can give you that will increase angiogenesis as well. So then that goes, not only does that go faster, but then once you finish hyperbarics, let's see if 80% of your benefit came from that and you stay on the peptides, sure, and you don't ever lose the new vessels. And then maybe you never need hyperbarics again.
They were also testing psychedelics where with ketamine. Yeah. For people with depression. So what they were effectively doing is ketamine was jamming into parts of the brain that I guess it would never get to and helping people with that. So they've tested with, I mean, so it's pretty fascinating that they've taken these different things and then used the hyperbaric environment to like basically drive it into the brain.
You're kidding me. I didn't know about the ketamine and psychedelics.
Yeah, ketamine.
Mixed with hyperbaric.
Yeah. So yeah, the low dose ketamine.
They're trying it with just about everything right
now.
Yeah,
they've tried psilocybin. And I like, yeah, there's, I mean, like, yeah, like there's no absence of what people are trying. But I think what's fascinating on the hyperbarics is I didn't notice it immediately. It was like 6 months later that all of a sudden you're like cognitively like doing something. And I can't remember what I was doing, but I think my kids have games on their phones, and my daughter came over and was like, hey, I'm stuck in this part. And I was like, I picked it up and I was like, oh. And like, as I was like basically tearing this thing up, I'd never played. And she's like, Dad, you're pretty good at video games. I'm like, I've never played them. And I don't know. And she was like, you're way better than you used to be. And I'm like, is this luck? Like, what is it? But the only thing I could think of was like cognitively, I could see what was happening faster than what I normally would. And it was just kind of a weird effect. And I think I hit up Joe and he's like, oh yeah, no, you can test it with like video games or like there's cognitive testing that we've done before and after. We can see the effects. And he's like, you know, and I'm like, well, how long do they last? He's like, we don't fucking know.
You make the assumption that you guys know all about the brain. But go through Nyko, they're like, we don't know anything
about anything. Obviously, it's like there's a ton of hubris in medicine, but we know like 1% of what's going on. It's mainly descriptive. We use big words to describe what we saw, and people go, oh, they must know what they're talking about. It's like all we did is describe something. It's like you watch a car crash and you describe it and use Latin words, and now all of a sudden it's a big smart idea. It's like, no, you just watched a car crash. Like that's all that happened. One of the things we know about psychedelics is that, you know, there's gates and, you know, there's gated regions in your brain. So certain regions of your brain don't typically communicate with other regions, and you have what's called the default mode network, right? It's like the parts of your brain you use on a routine basis to see the world in the way you see them, the way you see the world. Like that's who you are. That's kind of your default. And you can engage different regions of your brain that you don't ordinarily engage when you're under the effect of psychedelics. And then psychedelics decrease the stress in the brain, right? The amygdala, which is like our alarm system, it decreases that. And so now you take away the fear and you branch out. And even the hemisphere difference in our brain, right? You know, you have sort of the novel, you know, I'll use simplistic, right? So it's not quite true, but the creative side and the logic side. But you even get, you know, some of that communication, but you're getting different regions of your brain communicating that don't ordinarily communicate. And now you have hyperbarics in there. You have more blood flow in there. You have more oxygen in there. So those regions not only are communicating, but they have a higher energy level than they've had in the past. And so you accelerate both things because you're trying to accelerate when you're dealing with people who have PTSD. By and large, what you're saying is there's some amount of brain damage there. It could be all inflammatory, but it's most likely there's some brain damage in there. So, well, if you've got all these new networks and a different way to get around this problem than you would have ever been able to do before, plus you've added a bunch of oxygen, you've added new blood vessels, you've added BDNF, which is like repairing the brain, you're decreasing the inflammation of the brain, the brain's working better. And now you can come up with a new default mode network, right? You can see things that you've never seen before, and you can consider possibilities and avenues of ways of solving problems that you've never thought of before. And you would never think of under any other circumstances, you would never get there. So it's fascinating, but you know, it's a roll of the dice. You know, I mean, you're like, we don't know how it's going to turn out. We just know that, hey, all these potentials exist.
Huh. Yeah. No, it's weird to me that hyperbarics have been around as long as they have, and we know nothing about the effect, but we know that it's positive. I mean, for me personally,
the Russians had 1,300 approved uses of hyperbarics, and we have. Well, we just added a 14th. Israelis, I think, have like around 160 or something.
So when I was a current NFL player, my first year in Kansas City, we played opening day in Denver, and I got fucking smashed. And I called Tom Inkledon. I was like, Tom, you know, what do we do? And he's like, hold on. And he sent me a hypoxic chamber. So I pretty much put a tent around my bed, and it hooked it up, and I could basically sleep at Everest Base Camp every night. And I slept like that for years. And like all of a sudden, like my conditioning was fucking phenomenal. And I would have owned a hyperbaric chamber if I was a current NFL player, and I'd come home after every day after practice and get in that bitch. Like it like at that point,
I'd sleep in a hyperbaric chamber if I could have it, you know?
Well, I mean, I was thinking on like, like what's the too much, you know? Like, I mean, I know when we were doing the dives, it was 2.2.
You can test though. Like, so there's some pretty obvious markers, you know, because your oxidative markers will go up if you have, you know, because you're creating free radicals, right? And so when your oxidative markers go up too high and you can't supplement past it, then you know you've gone too far. But usually the first thing is you'll start getting some pulmonary toxicity. You'll start getting a little bit of cough and just kind of irritable. And, you got to cut back. And that happened to me just in a regular table like you did, the 8 weeks, 5 days a week for 8 weeks.
Well, what's wild, and so my eyesight got so good that I pretty much had it was probably 25. Like my eyesight was so good that we were driving and I like said to my wife, there was something. And I was like, hey, you read that up there? And she's like, what the fuck are you looking at? And we got up on it and she was like, you were able to read that? And I told Doc, he's like, his Doc's eyesight got worse. So yeah. it oxygenates the eyeball and it changes the, for me, it made mine better. For Doc, it was like, I was fucking blind. I couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
I was like, I got like x-ray peepers.
And yeah. Cause you're dissolving, you're dissolving air bubbles like into the aqueous humor. So the fluid in there. So you're actually expanding it. You're changing the shape of the eye a little bit. And so, if your focal point is a little back and then you pull it back and back into place, but
it was unreal.
Mine's the other way. Like my focal point, it's as I'm getting older, it's getting a little further away. So it just made me worse.
I called Doc. I'm like, Doc, my fucking eyesight's so good. He's like, fuck, I can't see shit. I was like, oh, okay, so we got opposite problems.
I was reading street signs like this.
Oh yeah.
It was going under them.
It's really, whenever people talk about this, life extension, and they talk about it's all over the fucking internet. The only thing that I've really come to understand in all the podcasts we've done, the 600 plus and all the conversations, I think hyperbarics are legitimately one of those things that are regenerative to the point of like anti-aging. And then the other one is probably lifting weights and training and exercise.
Muscle mass.
Yeah. I mean, we had, thanks for having, introducing us to Gabrielle Leone.
She's lying.
She's a legit crazy person in a great way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She, as I like to say, she pisses energy.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, you got to write that down.
Yeah. She drinks a lot of coffee. I know. Cause I like posted something on Instagram stories and she's like, I drink it all day. I'm like, I got it.
So she came in, I did a podcast with her. Then I drove her to, Wes. He's out in near the lake. He's got the Rogue Coffee, I believe, or something. He's got the outdoor gym.
Yeah.
Wes Whitlock.
Yeah. Nice guy. And she did a workout with him, then came back and I think was doing the podcast with you the next day. And I'm like, and this is a weekend for you?
Yeah.
Like, insane.
Yeah. Yeah. She got kids and a husband and this. And she's
And she's part of one of the organizations where we're paying, that's treating the SEALs.
She did mention that.
Yeah.
She's part of one of those. She got some energy.
And she's married to a team guy. Someone said it, her husband's a SEAL, but
that's what she told me.
He's a SEAL, but someone said he's a doctor. But
I think he's a former SEAL, and I think he's in med school.
That is accurate.
Yeah.
So I think his focus is going to be urology.
Okay.
So there's another one. Doc, you're not going to be the only one.
I wasn't the only one already.
Oh, I thought you were like the only guy.
No, we've got a couple that are astronauts, Blue Angel pilots, head of neurology, and SEALs. We have two of those. Yeah. I'm a low achiever, man. I'm a nobody in this organization.
I'm a little sad, though, that you were a peacetime SEAL. I think,
somebody's got to give Hollywood stuff to work with.
Yeah, Mike, how's the Everyday Warrior project coming?
It's coming along. It's grown substantially. It's going to take a little bit of a backseat for the next 2 months with 777, but we stacked episodes so that we have a backlog. And I think with Legacy Expeditions, it's just gonna keep growing. Men's Journal's been great. Too many things on my plate.
Something's gotta get it.
That's good. I always think it's a good problem to have. Yeah, no, it's great. Like I want to die trying to choke on eating the elephant. Like the idea. That's a ghost in here. Can you imagine if you had nothing to do? Like, that scares me more than anything.
When's the last time y'all felt bored?
I had something to say that I would get yelled at.
I'd be in the military.
Bored?
Like sitting around an airport in the military for like 6 days waiting for your ride.
I'd have to qualify that question in a couple different ways. Like, one, I love my wife. And I'm happy in that regard. But
this,
do you miss?
Yeah,
but. No, no.
What's your race is everything you said before.
He's slowly walking off the plane.
Let me start by telling you I love my wife. But
you do miss the thrill of what we did. And what I loved so much, and it's the same thing with you guys in the NFL, is if you weren't growing, you were dying. And so when it's almost slowing down. Motion is lotion, and not doing that job, not pushing the limits in a very risk mitigated smart way to promote growth. That's what I miss, and that's why Legacy Expeditions. I'm like, and I got it from the guys. I saw it. They're like, man, if I could just ride a little bird again, yeah, just for that thrill. I'm like, I think I have something, and actually something cooler that could give you a spiritual, emotional, sort of awakening, in which you know you need every few months. But yeah, I'd say it's
well, and you also, when I left the you job. Also need this shit show of discomfort and chaos that's going to bring out everybody's inner comedian. Oh, like, there's nothing funnier than a bunch of SF guys like just suffering.
We are going to like, fuck
and we're going to be miserable as shit. And it's going to be so funny.
And you know who's going to be
hysterical
is Andy.
He has made men.
Yes. And so, you know, when you put 15 of these guys in coach on a flight from Barcelona to Egypt, while one's like finally sleeping, stand by. Mm-hmm. Stand by, because they're. I think we're going to get air marshaled off of one of these flights when we arrive in like Egypt or somewhere else. It's going to be hilarious.
Should be fun.
Yeah,
I'm going to bring a lot of adhesive remover and antibiotics.
Well, I mean, the fact you have Doc, but if you don't notice, he's a fucking gorilla. So, and not only can he fucking beat you down, he's probably gonna be able to stitch you up. So, Doc, I always get a little nervous the day that like you decide to lose it. I'm like, I'm gonna have to take him down. This would be a fucking bad fight. Like, Doc's like all mild mannered. One day he's gonna snap. I'm like, ah, fuck, Parsley, I'm gonna have to fucking beat you to death.
I almost kind of snapped in your gym one day.
Yeah. And you know what? You should have.
I should have.
Yeah. I know you should have. And I thank you for not killing anybody.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Anything else, Mr. McCook?
Well, we know 777.givesmart.com. So that's where people go. What can they expect once they get there?
It is a donation site for Folds of Honor. And all I'm asking is just for a little bit of help. You know, we like to say that everyone thanks you for your service until you ask them to make a sacrifice. Well, I'm asking them to make a small little sacrifice. Again, 100% of the donations go to spouses and children, educational sponsorships of military families and first responders. So dear to our hearts.
You'll be surprised who come out of the woodwork to help. I mean, we're right in the throes of Wade's army, and we just hit $200,000.
No so, way.
Yeah, we just hit 200K this year.
Wow. Like,
today. And it's pretty amazing that, you know, a small charity with, you know, that we cobbled together between Chris and Tex and, I mean, Luke and myself. And then we've, you know, over 10 years given it back to Heather and my wife and them to run. And, you know, we built the truck this year. So.
Which hopefully I win.
Which, dude. I am so excited. I hope somebody
got five tickets.
I hope.
Colin bought two.
Dude, I want one of my friends to win it, right. And I can't wait to go deliver it to him and fucking see him drive around in it. It's going to be awesome. We sold about 600 tickets, which is pretty amazing. So we've raised 60 grand off that truck, and we still got about two more weeks left. But DJ and I built that truck in about 5 weeks. It was over 600 hours. Yeah. And it was 104 degrees in the shop. So we were bleeding out of our eyes, but we built it, and it's a pretty amazing truck. So I'm stoked on it.
And that's one part out.
The blue with the stripes.
Yeah.
But man, what's pretty amazing, and you'll see this with the charity, I'm sure you guys do, that like people will come out of the woodwork to help just because it's you, and more importantly, it's a good deal. Like I'll donate. Like, I mean, how could I not? I mean, we work in the SEAL community. We have contracts with Naval Special Warfare. I mean, to know these guys both socially in this and the guys that pay the ultimate price and a little bit of something to help their families along, it just makes a ton of sense.
How can you not give to them? We tried to send a note or just a quick little video to every single person that donates, whether it's $25 or we have, you know, with $1,000 yesterday. I'm like, $1,000 from somebody who doesn't know you.
Yeah.
Like that's powerful. That's impact.
So yeah, this is a great one. The other one I give to every year is VetPaw. I don't know if you know those guys.
Yeah.
But pretty much it takes SF dudes and they send them to Africa to hunt poachers.
Mm.
or protect the animals, but they really hunt poachers. Yeah, yeah. And I could not give, like, if I was like a Jeff Bezos or like just had like, you know, like a
cell phone,
like, yeah, like that type of shit, I'd be like, what do you guys need? Mm-hmm. How can we protect all these white rhinos? Because I've never been to Africa and I've never seen a white rhino. And I have this like terrible feeling that they're going to kill the last one. And I'm not going to be able to see it. So I donate to those guys. But I mean, the SEAL Foundation, what you guys are doing is great. It's so important because, you know, for us, these have been our friends. I mean, you know, I see Doc as, you know, as much as anybody. So it's a great deal. And, you know, I'm stoked to support it. And thanks for coming, man.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Yes. So that's the word 777, the number, .givesmart.com.
Yes, sir.
Cool. All right. Well, and Everyday Warrior podcast.
Dude, you've, had, Journal. Man, Journal. You've had some fucking banger guests.
And Doc. It's great.
We keep saying we're going to have you on.
We started low.
I got one last question for each of you. Mike, you're in the leadership camp. Doc, you're in the medical camp. If you were to give people think of battle the bullshit, here's one guiding thing, how I want people to think when it comes to viewing and listening to leadership and then taking care of your own health, Doc. So think of this battle the bullshit. What's one piece of guidance that you would give people in your respective fields?
You want to go first or me?
Leadership is such a vague art and it requires constant reassessment. What made you successful as a leader of 10 will not make you successful as a leader of 100 or 1,000, and things evolve. So the bottom line with that is you don't know shit. And I recognize that I was not always the best leader, but you know, ultimately you have to evolve as a leader. And if you think you've got to figure it out, you've got a hard lesson coming.
I don't want to really talk about medicine is I don't consider that my role, like, but if you want to talk about health, the most important thing to realize is that, half, so of the well-meaning, really educated, experienced providers, half of what they say is wrong. Of the people who are just trying to make a profession out of being some sort of health leader, 90% of what they say is wrong. The only way you can sift through the bullshit is to make yourself the expert on you. And you don't have to learn everything about everybody's specialty. You don't have to understand what every influencer says or understand every aspect of medicine, but you need to understand what you need to do to reach your goals. And your goals are your goals. If your goals are being smart, that's different than somebody who wants to be strong. It's different than somebody who wants to live forever. Like, whatever your goals are, they're valid. It's your goals. Learn everything that you can about that and learn it from 10 or 15 different sources and try it on yourself. Nobody's coming to save you. You have to be not only your own advocate, but you have to be the expert on your health. I can study a disease my whole damn life, and I don't know anything about it compared to somebody who's lived with that disease for 20 years, right? Like, what I know is a joke at that point compared to them. They've lived through it. They've gone through all these treatments. They understand them better than I will ever. And unfortunately, that takes time and it takes effort, but it's no different than the time and effort it takes to work out or to eat right or to, you know, mow your damn lawn, take care of your house, you know, whatever. Like, it's part of being an adult. You need to know more about your health than anybody else. And don't put your faith 100% in anybody.
Well, but I also think too, you have to have trusted experts. Like, you know, I reach out to
doctors. There's guys you reach out to and guys you trust, but like, I'll tell you, as a matter of fact, I'm 100% sure that half of what I think is true is wrong.
Well, but I also tell you,
I don't know which half. Well, that's the problem.
But how many individuals? I always think that's why I appreciated you, Doc, in that way. Was you're the first one to say that, like, you know, but you talk to a lot of doctors, and it's like, I know everything. I have the lab coat and the degrees to prove it, and mm-hmm. that I'm infallible. And you hear with such certainty, and I'm always like, how the fuck are these people this certain on this? And then it's funny, we'll talk about stuff and you're like, dude, there's not enough research to be certain on anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Science changes every damn day.
Boom.
Cool. Well, thanks for tuning in.
To another episode of Power Athlete Radio.
Bye.
Bye. Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.